Ah, yes. Thursday. Exciting day of the week, right? Friday's cool, too, but Thursday's even, like, cooler because it's like you're being teased about Friday. I love it. I love this show. Well, I'm a little bit biased. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network, coming to you live from Midtown New York, across the nation, around the globe. That's how we do it here at the Progressive Radio Network. Lots to talk about today. We're going to meet jazz legend Mike Ledone. Mike Ledone's an incredible man. He had a baby years ago, he and his wife, and she has a disability. And they realized at one point, at one epiphany moment, that his daughter loves music. And he created an event, Disability Pride Parade, which has been happening for the last couple years. But to fuel the money and fund the money for the Disability Pride Parade, they have an event every year, a great jazz event, where jazz icons just line up, man, for this Disability Pride event and jam. And that event is tonight. Tonight we're going to be talking about that. But if you can't listen throughout the whole show, some artists are going to be performing tonight. Chris Porter, George Coleman, Wynton Marsalis, Joe Lovano, Kenny Barron, and many, many more. That's tonight at 7:30. At the, where is it again? Sheen Center. That's right. It's on Bleecker Street downtown. For tickets, call 212-925-2812. That's 212-925-2812. And also, you can log on to sheencenter.org. Sheencenter.org. So we're going to meet Mike and hear his story and what he's been up to and many other things. But I want to delve into this from the How Cool Is This Files. I was doing a commercial for our app, which you should get if you haven't already gotten from our friends at Audio Now. It's the Progressive Radio Network app, so you can listen to us whenever, wherever, archive. You know, you don't have to worry about going to the website. Exactly. We make it a cinch for you. And, of course, we're always on Facebook Live, so check us out. But anyway, so I am a gadget person to a certain extent. Being visually impaired, technology has really made my life easier. I wish I was, like, 10 when they had the technology that they have today, because it would have really impacted my education. But so check this out. Australian lifeguards launched a drone equipped with a flotation device because there was a bunch of body surfers out caught in a riptide. And they were able to launch this flotation device, drop it, and save the lives of three guys. Now, when I hear stories like that, I really embrace technology. I mean, how cool is that? Can you imagine? You tell your friends you got out, you're saved by a drone that plummeted, okay, I don't know how many hundreds of yards from the beach, and dropped the flotation device that which you grabbed onto, and the lifeguards got to them eventually. But they said, you know, it would have taken them minutes to get out there. And in minutes, I mean, you know, anything can happen when you're trying to tread water or survive a massive rip current. So, I mean, that's very, very cool. And also, autonomous cars, self-driving cars. I read something very interesting about this. And I know our future is going to be embracing them. They're going to be ubiquitous probably in 8-10 years as they slowly start rolling out, perfecting more and more of the technology. And I'm really happy about that because right now I probably have about, I don't know, it's hard to say, maybe 7, 10, 12-ish more years of driving. Because of my visual impairment, I wear these telescopes, like I've spoken about on the show before, that look like what a dentist wears. Little telescopes on the outside to drive. Yes, they're legal. It's the only way I can legally drive. But anyway, after my vision will decline to a certain degree, those glasses won't help me. So one day I'm going to be going into the DMV going, here's my license. Got to turn it in. And it's going to be a bad, sad day. But the reality is, a miracle happened to me when I was 25. So if I have to give up driving in 5, 10 years, 15 years, it is what it is because safety's first. And I certainly wouldn't want to hurt anyone, certainly anyone in my family or any other innocent bystander. So self-driving cars are certainly inevitable, and I'm something that I'm going to embrace. So one of the things that they're having trouble with is that the sensor, the eye, I'm sure there's a technological name for it, has a difficult time deciphering the color black. Which, you know, when you're a 3, 4, 5, 10,000, 20,000-pound vehicle traveling fast and it can't see the color black when it's driving autonomously, that's an issue. So the top paint manufacturer is developing an eggplant color on the top. And the lower surface is going to be a reflective coat that you and I as human beings, maybe dogs, cats, who knows, will be able to see it. So the technology is working there to avoid that. And I remember reading something a couple months ago, maybe last year, and I think it was either a Tesla or it was a tract. Oh, I know. Yes, it was a Tesla. Okay, so it was an autonomous Tesla car. You know, Tesla cars are very, very high tech, sports, high end, are pretty well-to-do company in terms of being on the upper cutting edge of technology, well setting the standard for state of the art. So this Tesla car was driving down the road, and I believe there was someone in the car, but I guess they were using the self-driving mode. Who knows? Maybe they were under the influence and they're like, well, I can't drive. Let the car drive itself. Why did I do that with a kind of a southern accent? I have no idea. Anyway, this Tesla did not see a tractor trailer because whatever color the tractor trailer was, I think it was white. And I think it mistook it as an overpass. So guess where the Tesla went? Right underneath the tractor trailer. And I believe, okay, don't hold me to this, I believe the driver lived. Because maybe they didn't get decapitated. I think maybe they saw it coming. Maybe they couldn't switch it back to manual in time. But the driver lived. I believe the driver was able to, you know, put his head down, lean over to the side, or maybe they were so inebriated. Again, I don't know if they're inebriated, but it makes the story sound a little bit better, doesn't it? Because, I mean, think about how many people are going to be getting pie-eyed, especially if marijuana becomes legal in a tri-state area. And alcohol, even if it is or is not legal, that's going to be an interesting story. Like, can you drive an autonomous car if you're shit-faced? Interesting point, right? Well, I guess they're always going to say that you can't, and DUIs will still be in effect because, number one, the state always has to make money, local municipalities. And number two, you're always going to have to be prepared to drive the car. Can you imagine that, actually being in the car and having to drive it? Our generation, the generation who's maybe 10 years old now, when they turn 17, maybe won't even have to take a driving exam. You imagine that? Instead of the kid taking the exam, the car is going to take it and pass or fail. I remember, don't tell my sister, I'd said this on the air. My sister took the test three times, the driving test three times. And I remember my mother calling home after the first test and second test saying, she didn't pass. Don't make fun of her. Don't say anything. And we're like, okay, no problem. And I remember one time I felt so bad for her. And I was, let me see, if she was 17, I was 14. And I don't know how this happened, but she got the car, my mother's car, which I think was an Impala back then. We used to call it a Black Beauty. Big old black car with a red interior, kind of like a pimp interior, a V8. It was bad, but she happened, I don't know how, managed to get this Impala lodged on a median in a safe driving test area, and they had to get a tow truck to get it off. Now, my mom called, you know, and set the tone, like, but I couldn't hold back on that one. I mean, how could you let a sibling come home from a driving test and not make fun of them after a tow truck had to be called when you're trying to take the driving exam? That's some funny shit. I mean, you can't make that up. So I'm sorry, sister. I love you dearly, but, you know, I've done some really ridiculous things as well. But anyway, so I think that's a really cool thing that the self-driving thing is going to be coming down the road. And certainly we get that eggplant color taken care of. That would be good. One other thing under the in the file from the How Cool Is This files, bike valet. I'm a New York City avid biker. So I am always into cycling and anything that they can do to make it more accessible, safer, et cetera, which are actually they're adding more bike lanes in New York City. I think the New York City Transportation Board, Committee, Organization, whatever you want to call it, announced recently. They're adding like three more bike lanes on major avenues, which is cool. But this is even neater because this is bike valet. So coming this spring, that's a nice thought, spring 2018. Oof. We're going to actually have spring weather this Saturday and Sunday, 50 degrees. They're going to be having three different locations at different major transportation hubs. It's going to be a nominal fee, and they're going to be manned. So you can actually drive up your bike, get off your bike, and hand your bike to somebody. How cool is that? That's pretty amazing. Only New York City, right? I'm sure it's going to be well secured. I'm sure there's going to be hiccups in the beginning. But as an avid cyclist and, so many tens of thousands of people in New York City are just for leisure, or a lot of people commute every day. And certainly no matter how many incredibly sized locks you put on your wheels, your frame, whatever part of your bike, there's a will, there's a way to disarm that thing and get that bike stolen. There's no way to keep it really safe. So back bike valet is our last topic entry from the How Cool Is This Files. Hey, if you have anything you want to submit to the How Cool Is This Files, email me at mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. In just a few minutes, I'm going to be talking about Sue Grafton with a G, G-R-A-F-T-O-N. Sue Grafton was a very, very big mystery novel writer. And probably, and James Patterson is probably, you know, the top five, right? So she was probably in the top 15. And I have a great story about her. Unfortunately, she passed away a few weeks ago, and way too early. And I have a very interesting story about not only the books I read by her and how I was kind of enamored with her writing and her subjects and, just entertainment. You know, there's always like an intimate connection when you read something, whether it's poetry, fiction, biographies, because it kind of, there's an allure. If you're reading Trump's new book, that's a whole different story. But Sue Grafton, there's a very interesting story there I'm going to share with you in just a few minutes. But now I want to bring you to the thrust of our talk show today. The main theme here, it's about disability. And years ago, back in 2015, Mike LaDon, who is a world-renowned jazz pianist, and now he's a founder and president and CEO of Disability Pride New York City, which is all about inclusion, awareness, visibility, started a parade. And he realized that not only is he starting a parade because we need to have people with disabilities out front and center, but the people without disabilities need to understand the capabilities and the lack of limitations of people with disability. Mike LaDon, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, Mark. Nice to be back.
Hey, man. You got that smoky, jazzy voice this morning, my friend.
It's called a cold.
It's running rampant in the house, huh?
It is. Yeah, we're all sick.
Oh, I'm sorry. And your daughter's sick as well, correct?
Yeah. Yep. She's right here.
So the epiphany happened one day. I don't know how old she was, but you can fill in the blanks. When you were at home one day in your New York City apartment, playing, tinkling around on the piano, as you, I'm sure, usually do, and you realize that your daughter really gravitated it, and the light bulb went off.
Yeah, she loved to tinkle around herself, first of all, from hearing me do it all the time. And the oddest thing was, and the most incredible moment was, you know, when she took her first steps, which was very late because she was five. She hadn't walked yet. She could stand up, but she hadn't actually walked. So she could walk if you held her hands or did something like that. But one day we put her about 3 feet away from the piano, and we opened the piano lid and we just plinked a couple of notes, and she leaned forward. You know, we're like, whoa, what's this? And then she just stood there looking at it, and then her foot moved and another foot moved, and she took her first four steps up to the piano. She would never do it to us. You know, we would always be like, come on, Mary, come to mommy,
sure,
come to daddy. It would just be like stone, like a statue. but the piano, that was a different story.
That's funny. Amazing how she was so drawn to music.
Totally, totally into it. And she still does. She still improvises. She'll hold on a second. Oh, I know what that is. She'll be on the piano for half hour, easy. Just doing her thing, and she's got these themes. She's a creative artist, actually, is what she is, I think, because it's her own music. She's not playing Mary Had a Little Lamb or what, you know, the piano teacher taught her. She's making this all up, and it's on purpose. It's not just planking down notes and smacking the piano. It's themes, and in her left hand and her right hand. It's amazing. Everyone that comes over says, wow, that doesn't sound like just random little kid stuff. And she really is. She's got music in her.
Now, is this an anomaly for someone like Mary, who was born with Prader-Willi syndrome, which is a genetic
Prader-Willi.
A genetic disorder, developmentally disabled. I mean, is that a normal thing or atypical?
I don't know. Someone else just recently wrote me that she has a 20-year-old son with Prader-Willi, and when she read about me, she just wanted to get in touch and say that her son also. He doesn't play music, I don't think, but he loves it, and he listens to it, and he dances to it, and he's got the headphones on all the time, and music is the center of his life. The thing is, her son is verbal. The big difference is my daughter's nonverbal, so she cannot communicate verbally, and this is her way of putting her sound into the air. You know, this is her way of speaking. That's why I wrote a suite.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I wrote a suite on my trio record I recorded live in Vancouver on Cellar Live Records. And the title of the CD is Speak. And the suite is called Sweet Mary. And it's all about her, you know. I've played this same thing to her and I'm going to play it tonight to the entire audience. Just this thing that I came up with when she was a baby that I used to play to her, kind of a serene pastoral, you know, kind of impressionistic sounding piece. And that's what she reacted to. And I'm going to play that. That's on the suite. And the first tune is called Speak, because to me, this is what she does. She speaks through music, and then she really listens, because she also is legally blind. So she can't see very well either. So basically, sound is her thing.
Sure. Now, I mean, that must just resonate with you, number one, as a musician, but number two, more importantly, as a father. I mean, as a parent, you and your wife, you know, try to connect with her in so many ways, but just to be able to have that palpable way through music must just make your heart go pitter-patter.
Yeah, well, you know, I always tell everyone, you know, people always, when they hear that I have a child like Mary, the first reaction is, oh God, I'm so sorry. And I say, are you kidding? This is the perfect child for me. I couldn't have had a better child, because she loves to hang out. She doesn't watch TV. She loves music. When I practice, she sits right there, and she'll sit there for 2 hours and just enjoy it. I mean, wow.
It sounds like a perfect kid for me.
Like
So listen, we're talking about the Disability Pride Parade, which happens on Sunday, July 15th this year. But obviously that costs a lot of money. So tonight's event is all about raising capital. The Jazz Legends for Disability Pride happens tonight at the Sheen Center. Chris Porter, George Coleman, Wynton Marsalis, Joe Lovano, Kenny Barron, and many, many more. 7:30, get your tickets at sheencenter.org, 212-925-2812. And the reality is, all these cats you've played with or you know intimately, and they come here because they couldn't think of not being part of this event for you and your daughter.
Not only that, I get calls without soliciting them, you know, just saying we want to do it this year, you know. yeah, and in fact, I've almost got an overload of musicians, because I can't. How do you say no to somebody who's nice enough to do that?
Yeah,
you know, what are you going to say? Like, I don't think so. Maybe next year.
Thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, so I got everybody in there, and it is going to be one hell of a concert. It's just packed with everybody you can think of that's really great out here and really well known, and it's nicely laid out too. It's the way it works is each group comes out and just plays two tunes each. So you're sitting there listening to, you know, Kenny Barron's trio. They play two tunes, then Roy Hargrove will come out and play a couple of tunes. Wynton Marsalis is starting out the thing, so he'll be playing a couple of tunes. And then, you know, Bill Charlap's trio will come out. Roberta Gamberini will sing.
Wow.
George Coleman will play with a quartet. Joe Lovano will play. And Al Foster and Chris Potter and Doug Weiss are going to play just trio with no piano. So it's a really nice program. Like, you really get to hear a variety of stuff. And it's like having your best records and just, you know, when you play your first couple of tracks, you're like, oh, let me put the best tracks from this record on.
Absolutely.
That's what you're getting, but live. You know,
Mike Lagdon, probably the most challenging aspect of this is the lineup. How do you put, you know, who, where, and how long? That's got to be an arduous thing, because you certainly don't want to offend anybody. But,
right.
I mean, you got these massive caliber musicians.
Yeah, and you have to juggle, when will they be available?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you just find a date that seems to work. That's why I do it on Thursday, because it's before the weekend. So usually everyone's, if there's a night they're going to be free, it'll be that one. And then I start looking, and I had, you know, I had some people drop out this year, like Benny Golson got a gig, Buster Williams got a gig, Louis Hayes got a gig, and some a couple of other people. So, you know, it happens where they call and they say, look, I'm so sorry, but I have to do this thing. And okay, so then we scramble, get somebody else, put him in there. And oh, yeah, it's a nail biter right to today. Today's the first day I'm just starting to relax.
But your daughter is sick, so you can't relax too much, right?
Actually, I can't, because now I just go in and enjoy it. Good. And I have all my people there. They're doing all the work tonight.
Yeah, you got a great team. Last year, I had the pleasure of going with a buddy of mine, and we were just enthralled. We're sitting there, I mean, for hours, just really just grooving on some just musicians that I've seen, you know, maybe one, I'd say a third of the lineup I've seen live throughout New York City and New Orleans and things of that nature, different venues.
Right.
And then I remember I was trying to rack my brain, Mike, about who was sitting next to me. I'm visually impaired, so all I remember is my buddy going, that's the guy who was just sitting next to us for an hour. He was the guy on the piano. Maybe this will jog your memory. He's probably in his 60s, Caucasian, glasses. He looks like a lawyer.
Bill Charlap.
That's who that was. Unbelievable. We were hanging out with the guy. I'm like, that's him? That's amazing. So you could be sitting next to an icon.
Well, he's an old friend of mine. We had a sort of a mentor in this jazz drummer who used to play with Coleman Hawkins. His name is Eddie Locke. And Eddie Locke, Bill is maybe 10 years younger than me. So Eddie Locke, he called him his kids. He had a bunch, John Gordon and Bill Charlap, and they were in. And Eddie and I were playing a lot together. Eddie was older than me, of course, but we were really close. And so Bill, he always used to say, "Bill Charlap."
That's hysterical. He had this funny way of talking. Sure, yeah.
So I've known Bill since he was probably 18 or something, 19.
Wow, great history.
So we are old, good friends, and he is a master. Musician in every way. I mean, a great pianist, but also his mind for tunes. If I ever need to know any tunes, I call Bill Charlap and I say, "What? Give me a tune, man. What's a good one?"
Lay it on me, my man.
He's like a scholar of this stuff.
That's great. Well, he looks very scholarly. Mike Ledone's my guest. He's a world-renowned jazz pianist and founder and president and CEO of Disability Pride NYC. Tonight's an incredible fundraising event, Jazz Icons. We'll give you more information in just a few moments. Wynton Marsalis is going to be there in attendance. And I realize that Wynton, doesn't he have a brother with MS or autism?
Autism, yeah, he has an autistic brother. I don't know much about his brother, except that I think he's... You know, maybe in his 30s or 40s at this point. And I think Wynton is going through now having to find care, because I know his mom died last year. She was his primary caregiver. So he's got his heart and soul into this cause, that's for sure.
Well, unfortunately, that's an ongoing effort for parents and siblings, because once they age out of school.
This kid, I mean, he's lucky he's got Wynton and Branford and all the brothers to help.
Yeah, and it means
the scariest thought for me is because Mary has no sisters and brothers, and all my family's just about dead. I have one sister left. So, you know, it's a scary thought. The scariest thought is what happens to Mary being nonverbal and cognitively disabled and legally blind. You know, like what happens to her when I'm not here and her mother's not here to take care of her? And this is one of the main, this is one of the main things I that keeps driving me to do this, because it is a really hard job and I get no money for it, and I put in the same hours as a CEO of a major corporation. I mean, I'm doing it all day long, and but the driving force is thinking of her going into sort of a state institution.
Oh yeah, sure.
If I weren't here, you know, and the state institutions are so bad, you know, the people in the community, they call them gulags. You know, they're like the Russian prisons.
Yeah, it's
where
a shame.
You're just drugged and you're shoved in the corner in a wheelchair.
Deplorable.
And you're fed until you die. And they like to have people be as disabled as Mary, because they're not trouble, and they make money off these people. Lots of money. There's lots of money there. So that's something that I'm going to dig into before I die, and make sure that there is a change, if I can. That's what I want to change. That's one of the main things personally. But there's so many issues, for the disability community.
Sure.
So this organization I created, I look at it as sort of an umbrella organization that goes over all of the organizations. So in other words, they all come together under our umbrella at the parade. You know, so it's not about any one issue. It's about all the issues coming together and having a place to be seen and to be heard in public, in the
sure.
people's face. You know, we put it all in the people's face and say, here it is, at least once a year. And not only that, but for the community to come together and see how many thousands
yes.
of them there are. And see that
able body community.
I feel that they don't know that there's
no.
really, they talk about community.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really overused word. But, you know, what you're seeing in my concert is a community, jazz community, you know. Hello?
That cares, yes,
yeah.
That embraces
a jazz,
people.
A jazz community,
sure.
that, not only that cares, but that comes together.
Mm-hmm.
When one of their own is doing something that they believe in, they're like, we'll rally behind this guy, and we're going to do everything we can to help him. But in the disability community, there's many factions, as you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's very divided.
Very.
And what we want to do is unify. So that day is the unification
mm-hmm.
of not only the community, but of the abled and the disabled world. We like to think that's what we're hoping for. Ultimately, that's what we want it to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's a demonstration of inclusivity. And you mentioned before about the different organizations, the umbrellas. And it's nice to see that the New York Mayor's Office for People with Disabilities is there. And I believe, are they a sponsor?
Yeah. No, they're our partner.
Partner,
actually.
There you go.
Yeah,
even better.
They help us raise the money. So they raise some money, we raise some money, we pool it together. Because, you know, and this, that's another thing we're trying to do is to get more of the community involved with putting some bucks into this thing, too, because it's a lot of money, and it's a really a daunting task for a little nonprofit like mine to raise that much money every year.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're on the streets in New York City. I mean, even just setting up the scaffolding, the staging, the PA, et cetera,
oh, no,
you know, it's probably
yeah.
$20,000 right there.
It's $100,000 for the parade.
There you go.
So every year,
yeah.
you know, and it all goes out, and then it has to all come back in.
Yeah.
And it's not an automatic. It's not like the corporate sponsors from one year will come back the next year. So these are the headaches that I face when I'm doing this thing. And I really hope that it gets easier because I'm thinking, this is our fourth year. So next year is our fifth year. And I'm hoping after 5 years, this thing will sort of settle down and get to be more of a routine rather than a, you know, rolling, you know, the rock goes to the bottom of the mountain and you start rolling it back up.
Yeah, no kidding, no kidding. Well, you know, the attendance is well attended, gets good publicity. And
yeah.
I think an event like this takes a little bit of time because I think we've grown leaps and bounds with the able-bodied community, understanding, especially when you see Tide commercials, Swiffer commercials, et cetera,
yeah.
My kids' books that are coming home from school, inclusive with
yeah.
people with disabilities, and I love it. I embrace it. So it's happening. It's just like same-sex marriage. And
but the present administration is now putting a crush on it. So this is another...
Get in long line with all the other things. Speaking of right now, he's crushing whatever we're not on board with in Switzerland right now as he speaks.
Really?
Yeah.
In Switzerland. That's weird.
Yeah.
Well,
he doesn't know where it is, I'm sure, but that's where he is.
There's nothing he wants to take money from and put in their own pockets.
Absolutely.
And the disability community, he's got his eyes on that one because this is the whole thing. They keep talking about we want less government. That's just a smokescreen for we want to give less and take
mm-hmm.
in more.
Very true. Very true.
Less government means we want to help you less, and we want to just keep all this money and make more and take more of yours. And they're going at it. I mean, they're looking to just dismantle the ADA.
Oh, they're slashing it.
Yeah, and the woman that's in charge, she's just an incompetent, ignorant fool. And this is what's scary. So this year's parade, I think this year's parade is going to be a Wallapalooza because the community knows that their health care is under attack.
Mm-hmm.
And all the little strides they've made, all of them are under attack, their services. Someone was just telling me that, I just read this on Facebook, that, you know, he gets, he's a wheelchair user, he's confined to his wheelchair, and he gets home care. But now they're going to start in 2019, they're going to start installing video cameras in these people's apartments to see exactly how many hours the caregivers do and exactly what they do. So you're going to have the government
invasion of privacy,
having a video camera in your apartment looking at you all the time.
Big brother.
Big brother like a mother.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, if you'd have told me this another day, I wouldn't have believed you. Really?
I know.
I haven't read about that. Wow.
Yeah, I just read about that yesterday. This guy's a lawyer, so he's really up in arms.
Oh, is this the very prominent lawyer, this disability lawyer in New York City?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember his name, but he's a hotshot.
He is kind of a hotshot.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of a compliment.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure if he's got cerebral palsy or whatever it is, but he's in a wheelchair.
I've spoken to him. I spoke to him years ago. Good guy.
Yeah, very good guy.
Yeah, I was taken with him.
And he's very smart guy, and I believe what he says.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He's not being sensationalist or anything. He's for real. Mm. So when you start seeing that kind of stuff, and we have home care for Mary, so I could just see them putting, you know, video cameras, and that would be the law, too, by the way. It's not like you have a choice. It's mandatory. If you want the care, you have to put in the video cameras. Like, come on.
A class action suit. See it right away.
What about your civil rights?
Unbelievable.
They're taking them away, you know?
Stripping them away.
This is what it's all about. When you start reading stuff like that and you have a child that's coming up in that community, the only thing you can do is try and fight, and that's what I'm doing. I'm fighting like a dog.
And you have to. Number one, I want to just react to what you said about reading information online. It's nice that the web has obviously a lot of BS information, but different groups of disability groups and the way the information is shared, I love it. That's my point. First point. Second point is that you and your wife obviously are working so hard, and you have the means. Obviously, it costs a lot of money, but I'm sure you scratch your head sometimes and think about the families that don't or just getting by to make it work, or their kid just age out of whatever program they're in, and they're stuck.
Yeah. Well, right now there are services, there are ways. That, I mean, the government, New York State, is very good to its disability community, much better than other states. So there are a lot of things in place to help. And, you know, I find that there's, you know, a lot of relief and respite care and stuff that you can do to get your life to be more relaxed, because it is a lot of work. You know, and it is costly, but it's like I say, there are tons of services out there available. And that's another thing that people who come to the parade, they will get that kind of awareness raising, because we have sponsors who buy booths, and they're all people from service agencies, organizations that
absolutely
work with
great.
And for the community. So they will have all that information handed to them at the parade. And they're going to become aware of stuff that they had no idea was even out there. Because that's what we do. We're trying to not only raise the awareness of society, but we're trying to raise the awareness of the community to what they can have, you know, so that their lives get easier and
more enriched.
Yeah. I mean, we have an arts and cultural aspect that we've just started doing. We've partnered up with another organization called Art Beyond Sight.
Oh, the great organization.
Yeah, they've
I know
been
well,
out here forever.
Yeah.
And they're our partner now, and we are going to have a whole arts and cultural section to our parade. So we want, this year, the parade theme is going to be Express Yourself. And what we want is more of the creative side of the community. So costumes and floats and, I don't know, wheelchairs that are decorated and whatever you do, you know, T-shirts and hats, whatever you want to do to show your creativity, this is what we're going to do. And we're going to have a whole arts section for children to play in.
Fantastic.
The parade. You know, so we're trying to up the parade every year to make it better. Just like I do with this concert, I try to make sure that it's not the same people every year, that we have variety, that we have people we've never had. This year we have at least 7 or 8 artists that we've never had before, so that it stays fresh, and so that it makes people say, oh, well, you know, I saw it last year, but wait, it's different this year. Oh, I got to go again. And plus, the $100 that it costs, I realize $100 is a hefty fee for a night's entertainment. But that's not just for a night's entertainment. That goes directly to the parade. So basically, you're getting to donate to the parade, and you get this wonderful concert as a perk. That's how I see it.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Mike? It may be a little bit on the pricier side for a jazz ticket, Joshua, but not for a rock or pop concerts, man. No way. That's a bargain. You're not paying service, handling, convenience fees. Sure.
If you go out to a jazz show in New York City, you're going to spend over $100.
Oh, easily.
In the club. So it's the same.
And your drink bill is going to be $50 between you and your date anyway.
Exactly. So, but this way, you're getting to see, you know, I mean, we've got 8 or 9 different all-star bands in one concert. So, you know, in a jazz club, you see one.
Hey, Mike, share with me 1 or 2 moments from the parade last year. Of course, the parade this year is going to be on July 15th.
Last year.
Oh, that's right. You had a gig.
Yeah, I was in Holland. I was at the North Sea Jazz Festival.
You must have been seething, huh?
I tried to watch it on my computer. My wife was there, but I really don't. I only saw the pictures, you know, and it, as usual, the pictures, they're almost enough to make me want to do it again. You know, I just look at the pictures and the faces of the people and to see what they're doing. And, I mean, there's so much happiness. There's so much joy. And they're also getting to, it's also serious, you know, it's also an equal rights march because they're all able to express themselves as far as what they see lacking in their lives.
As they should.
They get to carry banners, they get to carry signs, but it's also like, you know, big companies like JetBlue and Nissan and New York Life, you know, they all have big portions of their employees are and people with disabilities. So to support their disabled workers, they come in and sponsor the parade, and they have huge contingents of people that come and carry banners and wear the, you know, matching T-shirts or whatever and march in the parade. And it's heavy. It's a heavy thing to see. What I really want to do, though, is get more spectators to the parade, and I'm still trying to figure that out. I'm hoping that the creative side, like more floats, more costumes, maybe more performers in the parade itself will make more of a spectacle to attract people to watch the parade.
I mean, sure, visually, audibly, everything.
Yeah, because, you know, not a lot of people come to the parade. There's just thousands
in
the parade.
Exactly.
But we want people to come to the parade because it's rewarding. It's just so it fills you up with the best feelings to see this thing happen because these are people that don't get this kind of treatment. And everyone knows that.
Oh, absolutely. I remember this takes me back, oh my God, 15, 20 years ago when I started working with volunteering for the Special Olympics of New Jersey. And back then I couldn't drive. They didn't come out with special glasses for me, so I would always have to have a ride there. And I remember whoever drove me, my mother or friends, they were just overwhelmed with just the positivity and just the camaraderie. And that's the same thing that can be applied to the Disability Pride Parade in New York City.
Without a doubt. And it's not a feeling of, oh, these poor souls, look how they're suffering. It's like, wow, look at this wonderful, joyful day of strength and how proud and how beautiful this is to see people happy. And you know, that's the vibe. It's not a pitiful. When I first started it, people were actually mad at me. And they were saying, you know, you're just going to objectify people in the community. You know, you're going to get the wrong factions. They might even come out and make fun of people. I said, well, let's just see, because you could be right.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You know what that comes from. That stems from a lot of uncertainty, negativity, people being upset. And of course, they just feel that this is going to be something that's, of course, it's going to be short lived.
Right.
And as you said, objectified.
Right. And it hasn't been that at all, not even slightly. There's never been any incident. There's never been any problem whatsoever. It's just been an incredibly positive, unifying day of solidarity and joy. That's it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Mike, I'm an ideas guy. And when you're talking about getting more spectators out there, my wheels start turning, et cetera. So two quick things that I want to share with you on the air, because if anyone's listening, maybe they can help spearhead this. Number one, star presence, celebrity, athlete, musician, pop star, crossover. We got to get somebody out there like that that would draw a name.
Right.
And number two, of course, this probably happens already with the New York City Mayor's Office with people with disabilities. They're probably well connected with the TLC. So plastering the taxi cabs with videos about the upcoming parade, et cetera.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be, that's a no-brainer. They should take care of that.
Right. JetBlue.
JetBlue should start running ads.
They put it up on, well, I mean, you know, I don't know how much a corporation that's not just a New York corporation would do for us, but the thing about putting videos in the cabs is a genius idea.
Oh, yeah.
I got to remember that. we did get the signs on. They have these new posts. I forget what they call them all over New York, where you can recharge your computer or your phone on the street.
Yes.
And they did put up posters about the parade in every one of those last year. But that's not enough. I think getting in a cab and just sitting and having that video hit you with footage from the parade, that would make it seem like, oh, I got to go to this.
Oh,
like
yeah.
A real New York event.
Absolutely. And I'm sure you guys have stockpiled a lot of footage in the last 5 years
yeah,
or so.
Yeah, we have tons of footage.
And, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm also talking to, well, I have a couple of big stars whose family members have, you know, autism or whatever. And we're talking to them now. It's very difficult to get, like, movie stars who are interested, but to line up the schedule so that they're in town. You're like maybe like Bob De Niro. I know he has a son who has autism. And we've been talking to his manager, and he's very interested in supporting us.
And you know what? Even if they can't be there, maybe that's a spot for them to do the ad, the TLC ad.
Right. That would be major.
Yeah, man.
Right.
You could time it around their schedule. Anyway, so let's talk about what people can do tonight. Come and see some incredible jazz icons at the Sheehan Center. Chris Porter, George Coleman, Wynton Marsalis.
Potter. Chris
Potter?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I can't read my own writing.
That's okay.
Joe Lovano, Kenny Barron. It's all happening tonight at 7:30. It's over 3 hours of music. Get your tickets at 212-925-2812, 925-2812, or Sheehan Center. Org. And on a side note, I'm sure you read this and heard this earlier in the week, that Hugh Masekela, wasn't that a shame?
Yeah, well, it happens.
Oh, yeah. I really liked his music. He was a good dude. He used to come into the radio station years ago, and I remember we were cutting station liners, as you know what they are. Hey, this is so-and-so on whatever station. And he was doing his bit in Swahili, and he just had us just hysterics, man, in hysterics.
Oh, yeah.
Good dude. Good dude. And
I always loved his playing.
Yeah.
And I loved – he brought something – he said something that really made me think when they showed the thing about him dying on TV, and they had a little video of him talking. He said that in South Africa, they were all united through their hatred of apartheid. And it's the first time I ever thought that actually hatred could unite people, but in a good way.
Mm.
It was the first time I ever saw a positive light put on hatred.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, he was known as the apartheid musician.
Yeah.
Certainly for
and
South Africa.
I can totally see that. It's like if you unite because you hate something so much. Well, look what they're doing against Trump. I mean, it's hatred. You know, they hate this guy. And that's why you see, you know, hundreds of thousands taking to the street to protest his policies. I think they hate him. They hate his policies, that's for sure.
Yeah, they do. They do.
You know, it's like all of a sudden it makes hating something not so bad.
Yeah.
In this beautiful, like, positivity, overly positive world.
At the same time, though, I'm kind of divided because I even just hate using the word hate because it just fuels something that's negative, and I hate to have negative energy. But if negative energy can turn into a positive force.
I think this is what really gets people going. Let's face it. I mean, if we had newspapers that everything was like, it's going to be a beautiful day, everything's good, your taxes will not be anymore, and life is just beautiful, no one would read a newspaper. People like to get riled up.
No one does anyway. But your point's taken. Hey, Mike, before I let you go, are you still gigging every Tuesday night, Smoke in New York City still?
I sure am. This is my 18th year.
18 years? Are you kidding me? That's
no,
great.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah.
You're like the modern Les Paul of the sitting gigs, huh?
Hey, if I could do that, that'd be great.
Yeah, no kidding. Mike Ladone, real pleasure, man, as usual. Thank you so much for your work, for arranging this concert and for the parade on behalf of every family member, friends with people with disabilities. Thank you so much for all you've done.
Okay, thank you.
See you soon.
Bye.
This is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Farrell, and the show continues right after this.
Hello, this is Dane Wigington, host for the weekly Global Alert News Hour from geoengineeringwatch.org. I'm grateful and honored to now be a part of the PRN Radio Network lineup. Every Saturday at 2 p.m. on the Global Alert News Hour, I'll cover the most dire frontline issues and stories which pose the greatest...
You are listening to PRN...
Hi, this is John Lobel. You can hear my show.
It's the Progressive Radio Network. I'm looking for my drum intro, man. It's okay. Anyway, hope you guys are doing well today. It's a Thursday. Yeah, you're almost done with this week. Even if it's a drag, just hang in there, man. You got one more day. And by the way, if you're listening to us, this show, Insight, that airs live Thursdays, like right now, in the 11 o'clock hour, Eastern Standard Time, but you're listening to it on the app from our friends at Audio Now, very cool. You're on the cutting edge, my friends. Of course, you can always watch a stream live on Facebook. And we're going to be talking about something that's a little upsetting right now. We've heard about this, and it's still happening right now in the courts. Actually, let me see. Today's Thursday. It may have wrapped up yesterday. Anyway, Larry Nassar, and this is the former United States gymnast direct doctor for, I think it was 2 decades. He had violated, sexually abused, molested, however you want to couch it, over 100 girls. And I just still can't wrap my head around this. I just can't fathom this. How somebody could get away with this deplorable, hideous act for so long. I remember reading, I mean, there's so many different accounts, but one particular family, the daughter came home and told their family. And you know what the mother and father did? They didn't believe her. They did not believe their daughter. Even if your son or daughter has a tendency to embellish, maybe not tell the truth, you cannot, as a caretaker, as a parent, ignore something so incredibly large, personal, lawful. It has to be investigated. So what the thrust of this, I mean, you've been reading about this, and I'm not going to go on too much longer about this, but I find it so, I guess, refreshing is the wrong word. Basically, the victims are having their day in court over the 100 girls who, one of them said, remember, we will not always remain a girl, meaning like they're going to grow up, speak, blow the whistle. And they have, and this is great. But to be able to sit in a courtroom, which cannot be easy, and I'm sure a lot of them, hopefully every single one of them, has been receiving some great therapy. And this is, you know, confronting the person who's done you wrong. Certainly, we don't wish it upon anyone to have to confront somebody who's undergone such a violent act, because we hope it happens to no one. But the fact that it did happen, and he's going to be going away for end of time. But it's going to give them some sort of closure. It cannot be easy on any in any shape, way, or form to sit up there and to look this monster in the eye. And I don't know how he could even keep his head up because, I mean, this guy's just life is so over in many, many ways. He's probably going to have to be in solitary confinement for the rest of his life. And if he's not, he's going to be incredibly abused, and I can't see him even surviving long after this trial. And I hate to say this, but there's got to be some point, even if this guy's really sick, a monster, demented, that he couldn't think for 1 second that he did something so incredibly, terribly wrong to innocent human beings that he could not live with himself. I mean, it's inevitable. But if not, maybe he's that much more delusional to think that he could get away with something like that. It just blows me away. And the other aspect of this, which is really inconceivable, is how some top U.S. Olympic officials got wind of this. They got wind of this and did nada or very, very little. Those people, I think, should also be brought up on charges, accessories for lacking, launching investigations from removing him from being the team doctor. I mean, in any event, any situation, err on the side of caution. I mean, obviously, we're learning this in the Me Too, Harvey Weinstein era. You have to err on the side of caution. If you even think there's a whiff in the air of impropriety on any level, you have to rectify it, nip it in the bud, because number one, it's ethically and morally the right thing to number to do. And number two, you're not going to be held as accountable possibly, maybe not accountable at all, but maybe less accountable if you act accordingly, timely. And for the poor, poor victims, my heart just goes out to you that something as gruesome as this could have occurred. And, you know, who only, I guess, therapists and doctors and other victims can understand what you went through. And we've read about this and heard about this, how difficult it is for young people, boys and girls, to speak up for many, many reasons. And it's understandable because when you're obviously under the care of a doctor, I mean, there's so much to it. It's just inconceivable how this monster, Larry Nassar, the former USA gymnast doctor for nearly two decades, can live with himself. So I applaud each and every victim to get up on stand in the courtroom, as scared and as quaking in their boots as they must be, to be able to say what they are going to say and what they have said or going to say, because it may be continuing, not sure, before the verdict and sentencing will be handed down to the monster, Larry Nassar. So that's all I have to say about that. I wish all those victims a healthy recovery, and hopefully a quick one, but I hope that's in our future. So this is kind of interesting. You know, years ago, my oldest sister turned me on to a mystery series called, actually, it's the Alphabet Mystery Series. Like, it started with A, and of course, there's 26 letters in the alphabet, so it would go all the way to Z, and it was like the Murder Alphabet Series, authored by Sue Grafton, G-R-A-F-T-O-N. And I really got into it, and I remember like A is for alibi, B is for burglar, C is for corpse, D is for deadbeat, E is for evidence, H is, oh my God, I'm surprising myself. H is for what? Homicide, I is for innocence, J, I'm guessing now, justice. Okay, I'll stop because I'm going to be guessing on arrest. Anyway, she just finished her book, Y is for Yesterday. And unfortunately, she died a couple weeks ago. And I wanted to talk about this. Number one, she was a great author. It was very formulaic, but a lot of people and a lot of like James Patterson fans love it because, well, he does have a lot of contributing authors as well, because they cannot print those presses fast enough to keep his books, you know, in print, the new ones and the ones going into paperback, etc. Obviously, you can see him everywhere, every store, drugstore, box store, the Costco's, the Sam's of the world, etc. But her books are very well read. And the story I want to share with you is an interesting story because it kind of is a nice story and it kind of touched my heart a bit. Years ago, when I was working downtown at a jazz station, CD 101.9, and that was kind of cool talking to Mike Ladone, the founder of the New York City Disability Pride Parade, because he's a jazz cat, and obviously a lot of those jazz guys used to come through the station. But anyway, I was on a subway platform one day, and next to us was a major building, was called Saatchi & Saatchi, which is a major advertising company. But in that building, there were two or three publications. Let me see. Random House, Penguin Putnam. And this is as all the publishers are beginning to merge. Anyway, I saw a tote bag on the subway platform and I recognized the Penguin right away. Oh, that's Penguin Putnam. Somebody obviously who works next door to me probably dropped their bag. So I picked it up. And there was only like a few loose papers in there, and I saw an email in there, an address. So actually, I brought it back to my studio. Long story short, I reached out via email to the person's name who was on there. And I said, hey, I work right next door to you. Happy to meet you downstairs. I can give you your tote bag. Of course, it's not a big deal. I'm sure you have five others just like it, but I'm sure it'd be nice for you to get your tote bag. She said, yes, that would be very, very nice. And she met me in front of my building. We're talking, oh, what do you do? Oh, yes, obviously, I work for Penguin Putnam. And she goes, what do you do? I work in radio, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, oh, by the way, you know, what do you do for Penguin Putnam? She goes, actually, I have my own imprint. And I'm like, your own imprint? Does that mean you're like a subsidiary of Penguin Putnam? She said, yes. So long story short, Sue Grafton had her own imprint under this woman's name. And I'm trying to remember her name. Her name is Marion. Oh, man, I can't think of it right now. It'll come to me. Very nice lady. And she said to me, yes, I published Sue Grafton's series. I'm like, are you kidding me? I love those. And I probably rattled off all the letters of the alphabet right then. She goes, well, do you have a minute? I said, yes. She goes, well, come on with me. I want to take you to my office, and I want to show you, obviously, if you're a Sue Grafton fan, some things you'll find interesting. So we go next door to her office, and it's one of those offices you'd imagine like a publicist, a person in the publishing industry, and certainly has her own print to have. Floor to ceiling bookcases stocked. And she's like, there's all Sue's books. And I'm like, wow, like I'm that close to Sue Grafton. I wasn't a groupie or anything. I mean, you know, would I go out of my way to go meet an author? Maybe, you know, but I mean, it's just more like an association. As I mentioned at the head of the show, reading somebody, whether you disagree with them, morally, if you're entertained by them, you know, you kind of have a connection. So it was a really neat experience meeting this woman who represents Sue Grafton. And so I remember she loaded me up with a bunch of Sue Grafton, swag, books, who knows what else. I don't remember. Books, pens, paperbacks, whatever. And I was just so delighted. I remember going back and calling my sister. I'm like, you're never going to believe who I met. Marion, I want to say, I don't remember her last name. Anyway, very interesting story. So it's interesting how doing a good deed brought it full circle to meeting Sue Grafton, top-selling author. So Sue Grafton, I'm glad you got to the letter I, and Kinsey Malone, your main character, private investigator, got to contribute so much to so many people. And I hope you get to continue writing wherever you are. So I mentioned before about Hugh Masekela. Hugh Masekela, who died earlier this week, great dude. He specialized in making some incredible jazz in South African and certainly known as the apartheid jazz musician. And we lost him earlier this week, and he was just a great guy. I just wanted to just give a mention to him, because if you have never heard of the song and you're into jazz, Grazing in the Grass, Grazing in the Grass, check it out because it's great stuff. And lastly, Tide Pods. You've read about this, but this is still a growing epidemic, but it's gotten worse because little kids, understandably, if they're not kept out of the way, they're the size of maybe the inside of your palm, laundry detergent that could look like it's candy. So kids are mistaking it, they're biting it, getting sick, etc. But the new thing that's happening across college campuses is college students are consuming these. Yes. You cannot make this up. Why? I don't know. I'm sure if you go on YouTube, you can see some incredibly ignorant students probably standing upside down, drinking out of a keg and doing Tide Pod shots. Don't know why, but I hope this is not a true reflection of the next generation to come. That is not a good thing. So have you gotten that app yet? Yes, the Progressive Radio Network app. Available on your favorite app store everywhere from our friends at Audio Now. My name is Mark Farah. Always a pleasure. If you'd like to have me speak at your school, college, or corporation on overcoming adversity to improve morale, because you can't be yourself at work if you're not yourself at home, right? Everyone needs some motivation and some examples, some metaphors, parallels to empower people. That's right. Give me a check out at markfarahmotivation.com, markfarahmotivation.com. The founder of the Gary Noel Network is next. Gary Noel himself. My name is Mark Farrell. Thanks to everybody here at PRN. Have a great day.